Hello, everyone. Welcome back to another episode of HR Leaders Live, the show where we discuss the future of work with today's most innovative and successful people leaders. The topic of today's show is women empowerment. We're going to be talking about what companies can do to attract, retain, and promote women to leadership roles and why it's so important. So to answer this question, I'm joined by Rebecca Oppenheim, who's the co-founder of NextOps Search, and Daisy Aga Dominguez, who's a workplace culture strategist, author, and speaker. Welcome to the show, guys. How are you?
Good.
Thank you so much for agreeing to join me on the show. Before we jump in, tell our listeners a little bit about your experience and your journey to where we are today. We'll start with yourself, Rebecca.
Sure. So I'm the co-founder of NextOps Search, as you said, and we're actually a national recruiting agency, and we are built on a one-for-one model. So I'm sure you're familiar with like Tom's Shoes and the companies that are really doing it in the CPG space. We're actually the first company to do it in the service space. And so what that means is for every candidate that's hired on our for-profit recruiting side, that donates career coaching services to a survivor of domestic violence. And that program is called Hire One, Help One. And we are women-owned and B Corp certified.
Amazing.
That's amazing. Well, hi, I'm Daisy Dominguez. Sorry, I was just... that was just a great intro, Rebecca. I have recently launched my own consultancy in workplace culture strategy. I have spent the last two decades building diverse, equitable, and inclusive cultures for companies like the Walt Disney Company, Google, and Viacom. And now I'm really excited about leveraging my experience to help teams and people courageously embed inclusion and equity into all their people and business systems, practices, and policies.
Amazing. Well, I'm so happy we're here, and all credit to you, Rebecca, for the topic, you know, and getting Daisy involved. Some really important topic, something that we never spend enough time on, if I'm honest, and I'm guilty of that in terms of creating content around this. So really excited about this. It's such a big question, though, we just posed. So I want to kind of break it down a little bit and maybe start with, you know, what can companies do to attract female leaders? Let's start there.
Yeah. So, I mean, this is definitely my domain, I think, as far as the talent acquisition, like the talent acquisition side and really first impressions to candidates. And I think from a company perspective, you really want to take a look at your employer brand. That's number one, right? What are your first impressions online to these candidates that are interested in finding out more about your company? Is it a diverse brand? What are the types of benefits that you're offering? Do you have maternity policies? Do you, you really want to look at that as a holistic way of what you're attracting. And also looking at the diversity of your company, right? What are the stories of the employees that you're telling? Are they all from one demographic? Do you have women in leadership? If you do, tell their stories, because that is really what's going to attract more women and more diverse candidates in general, really to your company, I think. I think that's probably number one.
Mm. How do you go about telling the stories, just from a practical standpoint?
Well, Daisy probably has a lot of experience doing that internally.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that, I think that storytelling is really at the heart of this work. And we sometimes, in organizations, we rely on our communications departments to build these stories. And we stop short of really engaging the employee population to tell their authentic stories. So I think that there's what you do organizationally in terms of ensuring, as Rebecca mentioned, that you have a really strong, meaningful, and engaging employee value proposition and recruiting practices. But your story doesn't end in trying to bring people into the organization. Your story continues as you're onboarding them. Your story continues as you're developing and engaging them. The story continues as you're telling the world what it's like to work in your organization. And you're doing it in a way that is representative of everyone in the organization. And when it comes to gender and gender equality, which I think is one of the most important business issues of our time, it's about ensuring that you're not just playing lip service to it, but that you're not just showcasing, here's all the women that we have.
Yeah.
But that you're fundamentally showcasing what these amazing women are doing to drive the business and to change the world.
And what a great time that we live in right now, where we can really enable our employees to be brand ambassadors for their companies. I mean, you should have employees that are so proud to work at your company that they're on LinkedIn and they're talking about the values at work or the maternity leave policy that you have or whatever it might be. You know, those are the authentic stories, right? I mean, they're kind of like micro influencers. They are out on their social media accounts talking about their experiences. You're not necessarily having to publish that on your About Us page on your company site or, you know, the more traditional mediums that we've been used to for the past couple decades. I mean, giving that power back to the employees, I think, is a really untapped resource for a lot of companies.
And yeah. It's also how we all talk. It's how we engage, how we connect, how we build real relationship. It's not always on a company page, as important as that is, and I don't think it's losing its significance, right. But really about augmenting the way that people are communicating and engaging and building and building networks now.
Yeah, well, I can think of so many conversations I've had with female leaders where they've told me they've been really excited about, you know, their maternity cover. And they're saying that it was so amazing. And that's one of the reasons why I stayed in this company for so long, is that they've really supported me along my journey. And they feel that still strong relationship with that business. And they've been there 10 years plus. Right? And I hear these stories all the time. And you don't have to post it on LinkedIn, like you mentioned, to do that. But people talk and they share with their colleagues, their peers. And that really spreads far. And that they are your brand ambassadors. And if you can do that, you know, it's incredible. Where do you think, because I think the recruitment process, we have a lot of work to do, right? The actual end-to-end process, even obviously the pools that we're actually looking in the first place. From your point of view, Rebecca, what stage of the recruitment process kind of needs the most improvement?
I think number one, it's self-awareness on what biases we all hold, right? We still are really using the resume as the number one way to screen candidates. And when you look at a resume, you know, for those 6 seconds that statistically a recruiter is glancing over a resume, you know, what judgments are you quickly making? And are those valuable judgments? If there's a gap in unemployment, are you just passing on that candidate and not really looking at it? Because that might be a mom who is returning to the workforce and could be an amazing employee. Or like a lot of the women that I work with through our Hire One Help One program, the domestic violence victims, they don't have linear trajectories on their career, or they might have jumped a little bit, or maybe they had a big gap or something like that. And, you know, are we not including them into the conversation without knowing it? So I think it really starts with checking our biases, which I'm guilty of as well as a recruiter.
And everyone is, right?
That's part of it. And it starts with self-awareness. Just knowing that you have them is such a big leap. And I'm excited to hear more of the conversations happening around this. I think we're moving in the right direction, but like you said, there's a lot of work to be done so that more people have an equal opportunity for roles.
Yeah, I think it's important to look at it across the entire life cycle of the recruitment process. Because, you know, bias is inserted at every stage. And so to your question, Chris, about how do you, you know, what stages does it impact the most? It impacts it at every stage, from your sourcing strategy as to where are you looking for talent, and what is, you know, what does a good institution look like to you, or what does good background look like to you, to the time that, you know, they actually, you know, when they're being screened, to the time that they actually come into an interview. Who is interviewing them? What kind of questions are you asking? What kind of biases are you impeding in that? And then there's actually the selection process. And I've led recruitment teams for many years. And, you know, recruitment teams are usually the ones that are faulted for the lack of bringing in diversity. And I always remind folks, like, you know, we don't make the decisions. Fundamentally, at the end of the day, hiring managers make the decisions. And other organizations like the Googles of the world, when I work there, you know, it's entire committees that make those decisions. So it's, how do you ensure that you're bias busting at every stage of the process, and that you're pausing enough to think about, you know, it's not, and by the way, bias can be positive or negative. So sometimes it's about, you know, like, well, you know, we need to bring in this talent. Well, let's really be thoughtful about what is the talent that we need. Let's be very clear from the very beginning about what the job description is, what the needs are. And then when we bring them into the organization, let's ensure that we're bringing them into an organization where they're going to be able to thrive. And it's not enough to just say we're bringing this talent in, but making sure that from their very first engagement with an employee in the organization to their very first day in the organization, that you're thinking thoughtfully and inclusively about bringing them on board so that they can do the very best that they can in the organization.
Yeah. And it's a spiral too. I think if you have a company that is lacking in diversity, I mean, the statistic is by far that companies hire the most by referral, Mm-hmm. Basically, the candidate is vetted before you start the interview process. The risk is automatically lower. Mm-hmm. So you're probably going to be hiring more of that demographic. So if you can get diverse candidates and women into the company, and like you said, we all talk to each other. And if we're bragging about the company or that we like it, we're more likely to attract that type of demographic. And so it really spirals in that direction. But I think that the number one thing you have to do is you have to be intentional. This isn't going to just happen.
Yeah, fantastic. Well, what are the next question in terms of retention? How do we retain our female leaders? We see so many companies that are losing female leaders faster than they can hire them as well. What's your advice and guidance around that?
I mean, I think that fundamentally speaks to the culture that you're building as an organization. So much has been written about, you know, keeping and retaining and advancing women in the corporate world and what it takes to achieve it. Chris, you and I spoke about this just right before this call. We spend so much time on fixing the people.
Yep.
So we tell them, get a good sponsor, get the right assignment with high visibility, lean in, and, you know, prove yourself as a dependable team player, have the right relationships. We have all of this important and tactical advice for women in the organizations, but we're falling short at really fundamentally changing the structures in the company that make it impossible for them to truly thrive and, you know, and to be their very best selves. And that's how you retain people. You know, people come back to an organization when they work for someone that they respect and value, and because they feel respected and valued. People, you know, deliver and give the most to an organization because they feel a sense of pride. That they don't have to duck when they tell someone that they work at this organization. In today's day and age, given the increase of social media and again to the point earlier on storytelling, I've worked for organizations I worked at Moody's when during the financial crisis, and I remember going to places and sort of even in the subway sitting down next to someone who was reading the newspaper and talking about the evils of the credit rating agencies. And I remember how hard it was to walk into a place that I still felt great pride in and that I respected people, but I remember how hard that was. And so now, in addition to those kinds of crises, when the Me Too movement, the last thing you want to do is cause more harm to the folks that are in your organizations and that are walking around and looking at the news and hearing stories about, their leaders and their organizations, trading sex for work or abusing women. And so all of that at the end of the day falls on your culture and who you are and, what you say you are and what you do to support that. And I think that's how you retain folks. There's all the programmatic pieces that are important and critical. But I think much more to that is about ensuring that you're creating a culture that, is truly supportive and engaging of all your employees.
I completely agree. I think that's such a great, overarching view of it. Really is what you say and what you do in your culture that make people proud to work at your company, men and women. I do speak as a recruiter every single day with women who are looking for their next job. A lot of them are at a company and have a great job, but they don't feel valued and respected as women, and they don't want to excel their career there. And I would say the biggest complaints are probably around flexibility. Whether they can work one day from home, if they can, just have a day off here and there, or whatever it might be with their PTO or just with remote. It's something that more companies are implementing and having either 1 or 2 days virtual or some kind of remote flexible working policy. And I think it's really important to women today for work-life balance. I think that's important for some men as well. It does not necessarily, it's not a binary thing. But that's probably the biggest complaint that I hear, that people are, at least especially in my area, commuting is so big. And if you can get 1 day from home a week, it's just 1 day. It's just an enormous difference. It really would.
It's crazy how that's not common practice now. It seems silly at this point. Yeah. If my manager doesn't trust me to work from home, what's my relationship going to be like with that person in the first place as well? So it's something so simple that we can fix immediately. It doesn't take a lot to change that as well. So in the organizations that you work with, Inge, what are some of the things that we can do then? And how do we go about changing that culture in our organizations?
It's funny because I've worked for some of the companies with the best cultures in the world.
Yeah, exactly.
And a lot of the things that get listed are things like the benefits that you get, and you know, and the perks. Oh, the perks, you know, free food and massages and whatnot. And I think
this episode of the HR Leaders Podcast was brought to you by our friends at Achievers. 2/3 of employees have 1 foot out the door in 2024. And the top reason to job hunt? Better compensation. But money isn't everything. The Achievers 2024 Engagement and Retention Report reveals that employees crave emotional salary too. What does emotional salary mean? And what are the ways to increase emotional salary to engage and retain top talent? Learn more about motivating your employees beyond just pay by visiting achievers.com/HR leaders. Again, that's achievers.com/HR leaders. Let's get back to the episode.
All of that is incredibly important. But I think fundamentally, it's about how you make people feel in the workplace. I think that, that is how culture
is. You have an awful culture and you give everyone one day to work from home, it is not going to solve your problem.
Yeah, you know, it really is. And I often laugh because we, you know, I've worked for organizations where we get really excited about being on the top list of best places to work and whatnot. But if my experience as an employee doesn't match what that story says and what that data point says, then that fundamentally speaks to a lapse in the culture and a challenge in the culture. And it will lead me to eventually talk to a Rebecca and someone else about leaving the organization.
Yeah.
So I think that there's what you do with perks and benefits that are important. And within that is flexibility. And within that is, you know, is the values that you espouse as an organization and how consistent you are in what you say you do and what you're going to do. And then within that is also the element of, you know, how are you advancing as an organization, you know, your employees as an organization, what is available to me to deliver to my highest potential? And are you actually asking me versus telling me, this is the space I'm creating, and therefore, you know, this is what you're going to do? Or are you really truly, you know, surveying your employees and, you know, and gathering that real important data, you know, the employee engagement data about what, you know, what would make their lives easier to, you know, be able to deliver? And I think that we spend a lot of money and time on employee surveys that don't tell us much. Even when we do get the information, we actually don't do much with it. So I think that it's fundamentally around how you're making people feel and the actions that you're taking to, frankly, equipping your managers and the people who are most directly impacting that experience for employees.
A lot to understanding that not everyone is motivated in the same way. I mean, if you want to attract women, it doesn't work like that. You have to speak to each of them and find out what's important to them to advance them. So in regards to doing these employee surveys, I mean, are we listening and taking into account? For some person, it might be a raise. They might answer to more money. And for someone else, that might mean nothing. They would take a pay cut to have flexibility or a longer maternity leave or whatever it might be that we see thrown out all the time. You know, we don't all react to the same rewards.
And we don't ask the right questions. You know, I often think, and I share this often with, particularly with women leaders, but you know, with CEOs and startup leaders. You know, if I had been asked when I began my career, what are the, you know, if all the barriers were to be removed, what is your greatest ambition? And what do you, or, you know, what do you feel are the biggest barriers to your success, and how can I play a role in helping you remove them? My career may have been different, and I've had an amazing career. I've very little to complain about. But when I talk to leaders who are looking puzzled about how to better engage, to your point, Rebecca, a diverse workplace and how to better connect with their employees, I often tell them, I was like, you know, I often ask them, what questions are you asking?
Right.
Are you truly engaging? And how much are you coming in through it with an assumption of what needs to be done? And sometimes an assumption that can be very highly patronizing and frankly, you know, not centered on the differences around race, ethnicity, and experiences for folks that really could help someone, you know, amplify and have a dramatically different experience day in and day out. So my favorite phrase, and my former boss used to laugh at, because he knew I would always ask someone this, is, you know, we can talk about as HR leaders about all these benefits we're putting in place, but are we truly changing the experience of employees? Because that's fundamentally our responsibility.
Love it. And I love those questions that you mentioned are so powerful for everyone listening. There you go. you know, next time you're having a conversation, ask. I was thinking I need to ask my employees that question as well, instead of assuming what their needs are and where they want to go. And because that's the opposite of the worst thing you can do, actually, in many cases I found out from my stuff. I had a few questions from LinkedIn from the guys listening. One of the questions was from Kafana. She said, what would your advice be in terms of the first steps to take in providing flexibility? It's quite a tough one.
It is. There's also a lot of really great resources out there for any organization that wants to do it. I think fundamentally you have to understand what your business is, and you know, and how do you best deliver it, and then think about, you know, and then also question the modes of delivering that you've always approached it with, because I think that we fall into habits, and you know, it's part of our biases of, you know, in order to have an optimal meeting, everyone has to be present. Well, actually, no, to deliver a really good meeting, you can actually have tremendous video presence if you run your meeting effectively. And if you know what your outcomes you're trying to achieve and what the goals you're trying to achieve, and if you adequately, you know, deliver, you know, feedback afterwards and outcomes driven decisioning afterwards. And so I think the first thing is to really understand what it is that you deliver. How do you, you know, how do you optimize your delivery of, you know, whatever your products, services are? And then it's, you know, to Rebecca's point earlier, is really understanding what your employees' needs are and how do they operate in optimal levels, because being physically in a place that makes you have to commute 2 to 3 hours each way actually is not the best use of your employee time. Mm-hmm. And it's not just that it's exhausting them, but it's also driving them bananas. It can be incredibly costly for employees. So I think that it's both understanding your core business and understanding your employees, and you know, and really gathering. And there's again a lot of great best practices out there about, you know, what are the tools that you can use to bring people in a way that helps optimize their time and experience.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I agree. My company is actually completely virtual. I believe with technology advancements today and with recruiting and the speed we need to recruit, we are relying completely on technology. And it's a very, as you said, results outcome driven business. So mm-hmm. that's also what makes it so doable, because we're focused on the results. And so we don't want our employees to be spending their time commuting. We want there to be work-life balance. Some days I have commitments during the day and I work until 2 a.m. and recruiting lets me do that. And our employees should be happy with that. So it really is, though, understanding your business. Obviously much easier for a recruiting company to be able to do that than, you know, a lot of other businesses. But also I would give the advice of starting small, you know, expectations and guidelines, and start small and build upon that.
Jeff Hayden is another, who's recently a guest of mine on LinkedIn. He's a fantastic guy, one of the top LinkedIn influencers. He just dropped a question, which I think is a really good one. He said, what's your best advice for men who want to be better at developing female employees for leadership roles?
I love that question. And I have to admit, you know, it's not every day that I get men that are asking this. And I think that you have to, you know, it's similar to the question that I asked earlier, is beginning with trying to understand, you know, it's not assuming what women need, but trying to understand what do they need to support, you know, how can I support your ambitions? This is not about patronizing nor saving others, but rather removing obstacles to success. And, you know, there's so much that can be done when you truly understand what is needed. And I think for a lot of men, there's a fear and an anxiety of saying the wrong thing. You know, and the fact of the matter is that we all bungle it at one point or another. Like it's gonna happen. But the only way to move through that effectively is to actually build real relationship and to build true engagement with, you know, with the women on your teams. So my advice is always just ask, you know, create safe spaces and create moments, because everybody deserves the opportunity to be able to express what they need. And, you know, and sometimes the needs are actually quite simple, but because in your life, you've never actually had to experience the way a woman walks on this earth and, you know, and the challenges that she faced, you just have blinders to it. So my advice is often is just ask, build that relationship, and, you know, and do it in a way that is caring and supportive of all the women and the men in your organization. Yeah. And then the next step to it is to be a true ally. It's like you have to show up. You actually have to say, here's what I've learned to the folks around your organization, and here's what I'm going to do differently. And actually model that behavior. That can go a really long way.
Yeah. I think at the core of everything you just said really is empathy and not assuming anything, not assuming the best in people, the worst in people, just being genuinely curious. What does this person see in her future? What is she looking towards? What motivates her and what stands in the way? Let's start with that discussion and not come at it with any preconceived notions, but just start from a baseline. And I think if you build from there, I mean, we all want to be empathetic and mentor and have people grow. And I just think it's a really great place to start.
And by the way, I would recommend that for how you manage your male employees as well.
Right.
Yeah. I was thinking the same thing as you're saying that as well. It's like everyone should be managed in the same, in that same way. So look, Daisy, I'm conscious of your time. And yourself, Rebecca. So I think we're going to have to wrap it up today. I'm so sorry, guys. I'd love to continue this conversation for another hour. But thank you so much for joining us, Daisy and Rebecca. I really appreciate it. And again, it's all thanks to you, Rebecca, for making this happen today. So thank you for referring Daisy and for the topic for today. It's kind of, we wouldn't be here without you, Rebecca. So appreciate that. Apart from that, as always, guys, we appreciate your questions. We appreciate your support. We'll be back same time next week. Until then, have a fantastic weekend and we'll speak to you all again soon.